Well, welcome. Thank you for being here. They've asked us all to put this slide as number two, that we have no disclosures to make. I have three objectives for my presentation this morning. First, I'll be describing our model of care, how it developed, and what we do in our homeless healthcare outreach. Also, I'll be sharing with you key aspects that make the partnership work, and also ways that we have assessed the effectiveness of the healthcare in the shelter, as well as the effectiveness of the experience for the students. Okay, I'll first describe the model of care. We're talking about a partnership here, and the two main partners are Azusa Pacific University School of Nursing, and the other partner is the East San Gabriel Valley Coalition for the Homeless. The acronym is ESGVCH. The next slide shows our university. We were founded in 1899. We are a private Christian university of liberal arts and sciences. We have a total of about 8,000 students, including undergraduate and graduate students. We have our main campus in Azusa, which is 26 miles northwest of downtown Los Angeles, located at the foot of the San Gabriel Mountains. And we also have 7 regional sites now all around Southern California. Our nursing program has about 600 students in all of our programs, and we have BSN, RN to BSN. We have a master's program and second degree programs now, and PhD in nursing. Now I'll tell you a little bit about the coalition, the San Gabriel Valley Coalition for the Homeless. It's a nonprofit 501c3 organization. We have a website that's, I think, currently being updated. You might want to wait about a week or two if you go to our website. And sometimes when I'm speaking of the coalition, I say our coalition. And I've actually become embedded with the coalition. Even though I'm a full-time university professor, I was serving as a volunteer on their board, and I'm currently now president of the board of the coalition. So when I'll say our coalition, and I'll talk about our homeless healthcare. But actually, it's not a conflict of interest because I get no money from the coalition. They're not paying. It's totally voluntary. And that's one thing too to kind of be conscious of as I'm talking about the partnership. We are administratively distinct. The coalition was founded in 1994 by Lutheran Social Services. And it was a response to a group of church pastors who gathered together that were concerned about homeless people who were sleeping around the grounds on their churches. So they opened the first shelter at a church, within a church, and brought in about 50 to 60 homeless people every night during the winter. They were provided a meal and sheltered the people overnight. And that is still the model for how the shelter works. I'll be telling you more about that. The mission statement of the coalition is that the coalition acts on the belief that all are called to turn attention beyond themselves to those who suffer, especially the poor, the hungry, and the homeless. This is the area that we serve in Los Angeles. You see the orange dot there in the middle. That's what would be called the East San Gabriel Valley. And again, we're at the foot of the mountains. You can see the green strip up there. That's the Los Angeles, the Angeles National Forest. There are 3 programs operated by the coalition. One is the winter shelter, and it still operates within churches. It rotates church to church all during winter season. Each church will have the shelter for 2 weeks. Then it goes to another church, and it's 7 churches. And it's open from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., and it operates from December 1st to March 15th. We also have an emergency assistance center that provides food, showers, referrals, health services 1 day per week out of a small office. And transitional housing, that's where the coalition actually pays rent on 2 apartments where families can be sheltered for up to 24 months. The funding, people always want to know, where's the money? So here's where the money comes from to do this. I assume that maybe some of you who are here in the audience are maybe involved in this type of work, and so we're always searching for funds to do this work. The shelter funding comes from the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, called LASA. We also get local city grants, other government grants, state, federal, also emergency food and shelter program, and private foundation grants, and many private donations. The partnership began by me being invited to a meeting back in 1997 by a public health nurse. The public health nurses were concerned about communicable disease and just the general health of the people in the shelter. And so they brought together a multi-agency meeting, and so I came from the university, from the School of Nursing, and we had public health nurses from two health centers, the Monrovia Health Center, Pomona Health Center, and then we had hospital representatives. Some of our hospitals are beginning to get more involved in community care. When we assessed our resources, we found that I had the people. I had students and faculty who could go out, and were always searching for clinical sites. Queen of the Valley Hospital had supplies, medications, a pharmacist, and a physician consultant. And the county public health nurses could bring immunizations and TB screening. This is a description now of how we provide our healthcare services. So we started going out there, and I've been, what we do is we try to go one night a week. We go one night a week for a 14-week period. And each week, I go myself, and I bring 12 to 15 students, and I will have one or two other faculty with me as well. We do our clinic between 6:30 and 10 at night. Okay, the shelter is only open at night. In the day, all the people are bused in, or they come on public transportation. They come to the shelter, but in the morning, they have to be gone, and the church goes back to being a church. So we bring everything. We're self-contained. I pack it up in my minivan. And I've considered getting one of those really big, fancy vans, those $200,000 RVs. But for a variety of reasons, it's too expensive for one thing. I don't have the money. And I thought if I spend that much money on a van, I could just house all those people. So, we could do more for them clinically. So I've stayed away. And then you have the registration insurance, where to park it, who to drive it, all of that. So we just pack up my minivan with our supplies and unload. And the churches give us a classroom where we set up. So what we do when we get there, we conduct episodic health assessments. We provide health care on site. We educate the clients. We also make referrals. I mentioned our staffing. I'll have 12 to 20 students. Toward the end of the season last year, I actually had too many students. I think I had over 20 show up. And I haven't been real strict about the numbers, and it's amazing. As many students come out, there's plenty to do. So. This year I might have to think about that. I actually had a night with too many last year. But because we have large numbers of students and faculty precept, we're able to see 25 to 30 per night. And I know that if I had one of those big vans, I couldn't run that many people through small exam rooms in a van. I usually set up about 6 to 8 exam stations, and a student has the station. And then they do their assessment, and I even push them a little bit toward the diagnosis and planning, which is fine for graduate students, but a little bit challenging for the undergrads. But I just have them take a stab at it. I just have them say, well, what do you think is wrong? What do you want to do? And really, that's a lot of what we do in community health. So the students really like that. The shelter now gets about 180 to upwards of 230 people a night. So it's grown a lot, and the numbers have not gone down at all. And that's quite a concern. Here's some pictures of our outreach. The upper left, those are my student assistants preparing for the clinic. That's actually my son there loading the van. I'm like, this is a family effort. Down in the lower two pictures, that's what it looks like at our church site. On the left, we set up with tables. And unfortunately, there's not too much privacy. We kind of try to talk quietly. If we have something really delicate, we'll take the person out or to the corner of the room to talk to them. And what's sad about it is a lot of the homeless people have already lost their sense of privacy. They are totally exposed and vulnerable, and they don't even care who hears their story. And this is one of our baccalaureate students with a client in the lower right. Here's a few more pictures just of the students and faculty working together in the clinic. And again, where's the money? So I said we're funding, our funding is separate, our work is separate. So these are some of the places that I've had funding. Originally, I got an APU teaching grant. We also, for 2 years, were funded by the California Health Manpower Commission. It has another name now, but it's they sometimes call it Song Brown funding. We also had some funding from the LASA and the California Endowment for 2 years. And now I also have a major private donor, and this was a man, I went to give a talk in a church, in a congregation, and a man heard me speak, and that was four or five years ago. I think 2006 was the first year. He just sent me $5,000, and he's been increasing that every year, and last year he gave us 15. So if you get invited to speak anywhere, just go. Kaiser Foundation also gives us some grants, and what we use the money for, there's a little buyout of my salary. Not too much. I think it's like 3 units per semester, so for 2 semesters. It also buys all the supplies. It pays mileage. It buys our supplies, our medications. It pays for a student assistant. Actually, she's now staff. I had a student assistant that was with me for a couple of years, and last year she graduated, so now I've hired her as staff. But it takes money to do that, and I could not run this program if I didn't have help, because I do carry a full responsibility as a professor at the university. The next thing I wanted to share with you is the key aspects of a successful partnership. So as I reflect on this, this is my advice. If you're going to go into partnership, make sure you have a legitimate organization that has good leadership. Put in place a memorandum of understanding. Seek funding from a variety of sources, as I've mentioned. Listen to what your target population wants and needs. Mobilize and synergize other community resources to enhance services. I mentioned that we have public health involved with us. We also have the Tu Chi Foundation, which is a Buddhist charitable organization. They send dentists out one night a week. We're looking at bringing in vision care, and so we're trying to synergize other organizations who could help provide care. And finally, I would say talk and write about what you do everywhere you go. It can bring support from surprising places. Objective 3 is the assessing the effectiveness of the outreach healthcare services, and we have surveyed our population for the past 2 years. It was just a standard survey that I'm not even sure where we found it. I have to trace it back, but it was something that had been standardized and tested as a client satisfaction instrument for an outpatient type of care. So we administered that. It was extremely positive. The patients are very, very grateful. And feel like the care is good, which is nice. We also do a case review. Our collaborating physician comes to campus, meets with the students and faculty. He actually doesn't come out to the clinic with us at all, but he does do chart review. He signs my standardized procedures. He's there if I need to call or consult. So what he does is review some charts. We use an overhead projector, and I take actual copies of the chart, but I block out all the identifying information. And we show it up on a slide, and then he will talk about what we did in our assessment. Did we get enough of the pertinent data? Did we manage it correctly? Did we make referrals appropriately? Was the data there? So it's really a quality assurance chart review. And he likes to do it, and he's a walking encyclopedia, so the students love it. They learn a lot from him just listening. Assessing the quality of the student experience, we do the standard evaluation tool for students who are placed here clinically. So the students that come with me, some of them, it's their permanent clinical placement. Others come for maybe just a few times. Sometimes they only come once. I like them to come at least twice, because the first time they're sort of getting oriented and the feel of the place, and the second time they really get to intervene in practice. What we have found on these evaluations is that students like learning about this clinic and how it works. They like having their own patients. As I said, I put them at a station and they do their own assessment on the patient. They like being in the decision-making seat, and faculty gently stand by and guide. They like being all together with students. Sometimes they come with their friends, their classmates, so they can all be together. We also have students at multiple levels in the program, and so we have students who are further along that mentor the ones that are coming along, and that's very nice. And they also feel that caring for the homeless is a meaningful experience. And our clients do generally, each one will probably generally have at least 4 health problems and multiple social issues overlay. So they're very complex patients, but good for students. In 2004, we conducted a study with our students on their attitudes. We did a literature review for it on student attitudes, other projects where students care for homeless. And we had a quantitative and a qualitative portion of the study. The quantitative showed a positive change in attitude toward the homeless, although nurses and nursing students come with very positive attitudes toward the homeless anyhow, and I think it's our ethic that we care for everyone. But they even got more positive after they'd been at the homeless outreach. We also did a focus group, and the focus group showed that the students understood the causes of homelessness better, they accepted them as fellow human beings, and that they had a better understanding, compassion, and social responsibility for the homeless. And I have some quotes to share with you on the causes of homelessness. One student said, "I work with nurses in a hospital who are one check away from being on the streets. Each of us is a lot closer to homelessness than we are aware. My sister-in-law just had lost her job the day before, and I went to the clinic, and she said to me, 'I can probably pay our payments on our house for a month, then I'm going to have to do something.' So it made me realize that anybody in my family could be out there, and she's not on drugs. So it just touched me, just the one night that I was there at the homeless clinic. I was impressed," this is another student, "I was impressed with how much they," and they means the clients, "socialize and commune with one another. Some of them tend to visit the shelter week by week by week, so they look for their friends. They know who they're going to eat with. They also had an increased understanding and compassion," and these statements show that, "a better understanding of homelessness and appreciation of the needs and frustrations of the homeless, empathy for the homeless, understanding of hopelessness in homeless persons, and I am no longer afraid of the homeless. I would like to know how to help them more." And this is the last quote. "The people I work with say, 'The homeless choose to be homeless, don't they?' Well, that was the wrong thing to say to me after this experience, because I went on for 15 minutes giving them this lecture. Do you know there are 150,000 people homeless in LA County on any given night? I felt like I was trying to justify them to my family and people I knew, because I think a lot of people have the same misconceptions that I did." I have to correct that number too. The student pulled 150,000. That's over a period of a year. It's actually more like about 60 to 70,000 per night. This is the citation of our research. If you're interested, give me your card. I'd be happy to send it to you. And our research for plans for this year, I want to find out more about the barriers for the people getting to the clinic. We can only do so much out there in the shelter. And we have a homeless healthcare provider at a community health center nearby. Well, I don't know how nearby it is. Everything in Southern California is far, but it serves our area. And they just don't get there. We make the referrals, and for some reason, they don't get there. So I need to find out more about why not and what we can do. Also, the chronic problems. I see horrendous blood pressures, horrendous blood sugars in this client population. And also, of course, the substance abuse and mental health problems. And we need to be more effective when we're out there in managing those. Also, I want to enhance the student experience working at the policy level, because that's where that will do more for the health of these people than anything, if we can get them housed. And so that means we have to be working at a political level to make housing available. So I am now on some boards, and I bring students with me everywhere I go to work on these boards, to work on getting more housing in our area, affordable housing. So these are the three objectives restated here. I won't take the time to read them to you, but I hope that you gain some insight in these areas. And I'd like to just close with a biblical quotation from Matthew 25, verses 35 through 36. "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Oops, wait a minute, back. And finally, Jesus and social justice, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me." I figured if Cornel West could stand up there and talk about Jesus, I can too.
I'm Dr. Cameron from the University of Portland, Portland, Oregon, and I work with undergraduate students in Old Town in our city with the homeless. So this is extremely interesting for me and really exciting. Could you put some perspective about the coalition program compared to what's available in that area for the homeless?
Do you offer the only shelter? We're the only shelter. The only emergency shelter. And we're only open in the winter. The rest of the year, there's no emergency shelter. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Sleep,
everywhere. They sleep along riverbeds, okay, under bridges, in alleyways, behind stores, around, in Pomona, they sleep around the city hall. I had one man tell me, well, we have to pick up all the trash around the city hall because as long as we do that, they'll let us stay here. So we pick up our trash and everyone else's, and then we get to stay here. And they, so really, there are a few family shelters, but the beds are very limited. There are two shelters for recently released men from prison, but they're also very small. They're like 6 to 10 beds. And we have 5,000 homeless in our area. The estimate is 5,000. And the shelter beds are about 1 to 132. So we're way, way underfunded, undersupplied for shelters. Although I've just heard that there's new regulations coming out from HUD now, and they want to actually kind of change from the shelter movement to more affordable housing and getting people quickly through. They would only be in a shelter to transition them into housing. But I have yet to see where's this housing coming from. I haven't seen the money for the housing. So I hope it's not just to cut back the shelters, because we already practically don't have any. So. Yes.
And the existing beds begin to dry up. Well, in your case, it sounds like you have almost no existing beds anyway.
So, right.
I could just imagine what a struggle it would be to keep the beds that you have. Mm-hmm. You said you had two apartments?
Yes, two apartments that we pay for. Uh-huh. And it costs about $20,000 a year to
right.
rent those two apartments. No, there is a little bit more available for families. The Department of Public Social Services has some programs through the county that will pay rent for people for up to 4 months. And there's also with the HPRP, have you heard of that? The housing, forget what that stands for, but something prevention. It's Homelessness Prevention Act. It was part of the stimulus package, and that is helping to prevent homelessness. So when people are behind on their rent, they can get some assistance so that they don't end up out on the street. But they have to be, to get the help, what's interesting is to get the help, you almost don't need the help. To qualify for a lot of these programs, you have to, they have to see that down the line you're going to have some income and you're going to be able to sustain yourself or nobody wants to help you. So whereas our programs, we help anybody without question. They can come to us. And we get about 1,000 in the shelter over the 3.5 months. I think it's more than that, about 1,300 unduplicated persons, even though it's about 200 a night. Nope. They just have to behave.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been a little bit of a struggle with some of the church people. They're like, well, why do you let these people come in drunk? And it's like, well, they're the most at risk to being on the street. They'll, you know, get hypothermia if they're out there. So, okay. I need, oh, okay.
I have lots more questions. I can give you my
Okay. Okay, great. Well, let's talk. I want to hear about your program, too.
There was one more question.
Back here.
I just thought, I mean, your presentation was wonderful. It was very positive. Surely you have problems
Well, so some of the biggest issues are just where to store my stuff, because this, as we grow and offer more services, I have things like pulse oximeter. If I'm putting equipment for students at 6 stations, you know, I have boxes of equipment for each station, and I have to have a place to put that. So it's storage of the equipment. Without that isn't going to cost a lot is hard. The university gives me a little corner right now and in the skills lab, and the skills lab director is not very happy about it. But the dean, fortunately, has overridden and said I could stay there. But the storage, transporting the stuff, you know, it's lift. But I do an orientation for the students before we go out. It took me several years to learn that. You can't orient them out there. You have to do it before. So we orient them, and then I have that group there, and I say, okay, part of orientation is you get to load the van. So then it goes pretty quickly. And then I get my family to help me load and unload, my husband and my son. And then, just handling the stuff is part of it. And then just keeping track of who's coming and all of that. And then I guess those are the most challenging things. All the documentation, there's a lot of record keeping that we have to do, and certain, there are some legal requirements that we have to meet, and that sort of thing. So those are the challenges.
Thank you.